This Quest for Gold sponsorship is brought to you by ComEd, providing options and resources to businesses looking to make the switch to electric vehicles. Learn more at comed.com/clean.
Welcome to Quest for Gold. We are just 3 weeks away from the opening ceremonies of the 2024 Summer Games in Paris, and the Team USA roster is almost completely filled out. Last week, the U.S. men's and women's gymnastics teams were named. They include Paul Juda on the men's side, who we spoke with in last week's episode of Quest for Gold. I reached out to Paul to congratulate him. He said he's happy he doesn't have to ninja kick the Lego Eiffel Tower he used for inspiration to get to the games. He'll be joined in Paris by Asher Hong, Brody Malone, Frederick Richard, and Stephen Nadeau. On the women's side, no surprise, Simone Biles leads the team, which also includes previous Olympic teammates Suni Lee, Jade Carey, and Jordan Chiles. They'll also be joined this year by 16-year-old Hesley Rivera, who's the youngest athlete of any sport on Team USA, headed to Paris. 12 American skateboarders are heading to Paris, 6 men, 6 women, 4 are repeat Olympians, including Jagger Eaton, who won bronze in the men's street back in Tokyo. Monday, we'll find out about the men's U.S. Olympic soccer team roster. There will be a joint press conference with both the men's and women's teams in New York immediately after the roster reveal. We learned last month the women's roster. Team USA has announced its para roster for swimming, and it does include Ahalia Lettenberger, who we spoke with back in episode 22. USA men's basketball has begun training camp in Las Vegas with its star-studded roster that includes LeBron James, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant. They'll have an exhibition against Team Canada to wrap up a 4-day training camp. NBA standouts Luka Doncic of Slovenia and Giannis Antetokounmpo of Greece are hoping these last couple qualifying basketball tournaments will get them into the Olympics. There are 4 open slots that still have to be determined for the tournament. The Seine River water did show an improvement in quality over the last report, leading some to believe it may be safe in time for Olympic competitions later this month. In fact, this week, a 75-year-old American swimmer swam the river to show it was safe. Joel Strat McClure actually swam the Seine in 1976 for a magazine cover shoot. He said before his swim last week, "I may regret having swum, but if I come back alive, it will prove that the French have done a good job cleaning up the river." This week, Paris organizers agreed to allow 2,500 air conditioning units for the athletes' village, bucking the request from the Olympic Committee, which was striving for the greenest Olympic Games. Team USA, along with Canada, Great Britain, Germany, and others, had said they were planning to provide AC units for their own athletes. On this week's Athlete Spotlight, we had a chance to chat with triple jumper Tori Franklin, who was able to visit us in studio. Fresh off her second Olympic berth, we had a chance to chat about her Tokyo performance and her preparations heading into Paris.
I'm very excited that you're here. This
Me
is
too.
So cool.
It
you're
is.
Back in Chicago.
Yes.
Congratulations. You just qualified for your second Olympics.
Thank you.
Walk me through everything that happened in Eugene, because we had this interview set up before the trials, and I mean, you bet on yourself, that's
right.
For sure, but I knew that when you came here that you would be qualified. You must have had that confidence as well.
Absolutely. You know, of course, there's always a little bit of stakes when you try to plan something like that. It's like, yeah, I might make the team. What happens? I don't know. But I'm really happy that I was able to go out there, do what I needed to do, and qualify for the team. There are some things, of course, I want to fix within my competition, but I believe that I have enough time to kind of put those things together before heading to Paris.
2 days of jumping, is that what it was in Eugene?
Yes, prelims and finals.
And how are you feeling about, you know, your jumps and kind of where you're at headed into Paris?
Yes, so I'm still recovering from a significant injury that I had last August. I tore my plantar fascia, which is on the bottom of my foot. And I kind of just really pushed and willed my way to being healthy enough to compete for the outdoor season. And so I didn't jump as well as I would have liked. But, you know, I'm giving myself grace and acknowledging that I was able to still come back and jump and qualify.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the competition at the U.S. level. I mean, is that pretty stiff competition going in there?
Mm-hmm. Yes. There's 2 other women that jump well and also have the qualifying standard. So there's always a good competition between the 3 of us, and you just never know who's going to come out on top.
Are you guys friendly, though?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's a very specific, unique event. Mm-hmm. So you guys probably all gravitate toward each other, right? It's like you guys are kind of all in the same boat. You don't train together, though, do you?
We do not.
Okay, mm-mm. All right. Because you train in Greece.
Correct.
All right. And what is that like? Why, first of all, why Greece? And and kind of what do you do there that maybe you can't do here in the States?
Yeah, I chose to go to Greece because there's a coach there that just, I believe he's the best. And he, the way that he coaches works so well with who I am as a person and, of course, with the way that my body moves. And so he was the person that I gravitated to when it was time for me to kind of make a big decision on how the rest of my career was going to go.
Okay. And connecting, this has been a big part of everything I've seen you posting on social media. You've written a book, kind of connecting that your mind to your body. Obviously something you need to do very much in the sport that you're in. Talk to me a little bit about how you take that on.
Yes, it's so important. Like the thing that you'll always hear a track athlete say is that it's, you know, 90% mental in this sport. You can be the fastest, you can be the strongest, but if you're not confident when you're doing, if you're not connected to your body, if you're not like mentally and emotionally stable, you're not going to compete. Well, it's simple as that. And you can kind of look at the Olympic trials right now that there are some medalists who did not qualify. Mm-hmm. There are people who were ranked number one in the world who haven't made the team. And so it's such a important part of track and field to kind of keep that balance and making sure that you're taking care of your mental health.
And it's kind of the Wild West, right? Like, is you could have someone from college, or there were some high schoolers who are competing who all of a sudden out of nowhere are, you know, in prime time and you know, obviously a threat. So I want to get more into the Live Happy Project. Mm-hmm. And that's HAPPII, right? Yes. Talk to me a little bit about what that is.
The Live Happy Project is my nonprofit. It is my baby. The whole goal of the whole thing is to eventually take inner-city BIPOC youth to an international retreat, particularly in the Dominican Republic. The goal is to help them have a broader vision of what their life could be, help them to get connected with the land and connected to other people and cultures, as well as give them holistic tips on how to manage their mental wellness.
How's the response been?
People love it, the idea. We're actually hosting our first set of events this summer, or in this fall, which I'm really excited for. It's called Live Happy Week, and we have a couple of different events going. The one I'm most excited for is the Field Day. It's going to be like, you know, the old school events where we have the three-legged race and the potato sack race, tug of war, and we just want the whole city to come out. That's September 21st at Gately Stadium.
You're from Chicago.
I am.
You grew up in Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
So are you giving back to the community that raised you?
Doing.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's very cool. And I'm glad that you've gotten such a good response. Talk to me a little bit about the book.
Yes, my book, You Anthem. There's two parts. The first half of it really goes through my mental health journey. I suffered from different bouts of depression due to various abuse or just self-worth issues. And I explain how I got from those low points to where I am today, and just giving back tips on how people can manage theirs, whether that's through meditation, visualization, yoga, different mirror exercises. And then the second half is kind of how I applied all of those tips and brought myself from Tokyo Olympic failure, to a world championship medal in 1 year.
I want to talk a little bit about what is deemed failure versus what is not deemed failure. I mean, do you consider Tokyo to be a failure? I'm sure you did then.
Right.
Do you still consider it at this point now on the verge of going to Paris?
At the time, you're right, I did consider it a failure. I didn't want to take on the OLY, the Oli, on the back of my name. But where I am now, I don't consider it a failure anymore. I consider it a learning experience. It was a very tough time for me because I really wanted to do well. I really saw myself competing well in that period. And I really struggled mentally. So it's kind of brought me to a whole different level, actually. And I'm at a really good place mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and everything.
That's great. Did you have to go through kind of the same progression with the injury?
With the injury, yes, but it wasn't as long because I was already kind of in a good place mentally. I was 100% disappointed because it happened at the Budapest World Championships and I wanted to compete well. I felt ready to compete well and I wasn't able to do that. So, of course, I was disappointed, but I knew that I have what it takes, the determination to get myself healthy again.
Sure.
I think part of the struggle is, first of all, knowing that you're in a mental health struggle, right? That's a big part. And then defining it and then trying to find a way to dig out of it. So you've offered many tools here that you've brought up. Do you find that one works better than the other, or sometimes you need to try a whole bunch of different things?
It really varies per person. For me, I know what I need to kind of keep myself balanced. And that's definitely a regular meditation, daily, for sure weekly. And then also getting into nature, putting my feet in the grass, you know, seeing something beautiful is necessary for me, and dancing just to kind of like let loose and be free. And I encourage everybody to kind of experiment and just see what works best for them. It doesn't have to be, you know, it could be like writing or reading a book, whatever works for you to help you kind of stay sane.
I was at a conference in Milwaukee a couple weeks ago, and they were talking about happiness. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously a big part of your focus. And they said, you know, happiness is great, but you're not always going to be happy.
Right.
You know, and don't get confused that, you know, because you're anxious or because you're scared or because you're sad, mm-hmm. that you're, you know, not happy. I mean, or I think joy is another word that people have used before. Mm-hmm. I mean, it kind of, are these some of the revelations that you've had that it's okay to be disappointed, it's okay to be mm-hmm. scared about something? And
yes, absolutely. And that's something that I want to make sure is like not confused, even though my Instagram is Live Happy and I have a Live Happy tattoo, my nonprofit's Live Happy. I'm not like telling people, oh, you need to always be happy. That's absolutely like not the case. It's impossible. But it's accepting all of the emotions that you have when you have them, and then just kind of letting them be and not identifying with them. Like, you can experience sadness, but you are not sad. You know, it's all about like changing the language.
What do you do? Maybe some kind of ritual or pregame warm-up, mm-hmm. as far as before you jump, to get into that right place physically and mentally?
In the mornings before competition, I definitely meditate and I do some sort of movement, which resembles dancing. It's kind of like a dance therapy. It's more of like shaking and jumping around, just kind of like loosening up my body. And occasionally I journal, but if it's a sunny day, I like to kind of just like sit in the sun for a little bit.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And doing that, even if you're in a weird place, it tends to at least relax you.
Yes.
I mean, because when you're doing... You're in a sport where, you know, it's only a couple of seconds, the actual event mm-hmm. itself, but the preparation leading up to it is incredible. Do you find yourself in that moment when you're launching mm-hmm. that you're thinking, or are you not thinking? Are you in total flow mode at that point?
So on the field, because triple jump lasts maybe about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour.
The event itself does.
The event itself, yeah.
You're not jumping for an hour.
Right.
That'd be amazing.
In between jumps, I do find myself like meditating and regrounding myself, visualizing to kind of stay present. But during the actual jump, no, I'm not thinking very much. I'm feeling, because, you know, it's physical, obviously. And so if I'm too much in my mind, then it's going to take away from that.
Sure. Do you find yourself, compared to the lead up to Tokyo, and this is kind of... This may be a leading question because it's something that I've noticed talking to athletes. Mm-hmm. First time going to the Olympics, very results driven. You know, come back, you're either super excited or you're disappointed. I've talked to some Olympians who won a medal and they were still disappointed. Mm-hmm. You know, there was like that was it at the end. Mm-hmm. And then the second time around, they're hyper-focused on maybe the process a little bit more. Do you feel like you've mm-hmm. made that from results driven to more process driven?
For sure. And Tokyo for me was a very difficult time, particularly because the coach that I was with before had just kicked me off of his team 3 months before because he said I wouldn't medal and he didn't believe I had what it took to like compete. And so that was very hard for me mentally. And of course, I went into Tokyo.
Did you believe
like,
him?
I didn't believe him. But of course, some of that sinks in when somebody's telling you that all the your coach, the person who's supposed to be like guiding you. And so I did carry some of that with me into Tokyo, and it was very results like, I can compete, I can do well, watch how far I'm going to jump, look at these results. And I obviously didn't do that. So this time is very different. I just want to really focus on executing and being so present. This Olympics is very different than Tokyo. Tokyo was during quarantine time or COVID times, so everything was closed. We couldn't explore. Mm-hmm. And I just really want to just relish in the moment and do the opening ceremony and everything and just really have my Olympic moment.
Are you going to have a chance to do all the ceremonies? When is it? When are the events? When are your events compared to everything? And are you staying in Paris?
Yes, I am. The opening ceremony is July 26th. So I will be there for that. And I compete about a week and a half after that on August 2nd and 3rd.
So closings might be an opportunity as well.
Yes. Closing, I think, is August 11th or 10th. And I am going to stay the entire time.
You going to check out any other sports?
Yes.
What do you like?
I want to see the taekwondo. I want to see fencing. I want to see the swimming.
Sure.
If I don't know if I can get into gymnastics, but because that's usually pretty packed. But I would like to try to get into gymnastics.
I mean, you're gonna try to hunt down Suni Lee and Simone Biles and see if you can find them. That's a really cool experience. I've heard two things. Number one, the best day is the day when you get all your swag.
Yep.
You get all your. I saw the Ralph Lauren stuff. Did you see that?
I did.
You're salivating. It's like, oh, this is going to be awesome because you get to keep all that stuff, the bags, the watch. It sounds like you guys are going to get a portable air conditioning unit too. I don't know if you heard about this.
No, I did not hear about that.
Yeah, they don't have air conditioning, but apparently Team USA and the Brits and the Germans might be able to get some air conditioning. So that's really cool.
I didn't know about that.
You've been to Paris before?
I have. Mm-hmm. I was living there for a little bit.
All right. So this is, the venue then that you'll be at? That's part of the battle, right? You already know kind of visually what you're going to be a part of. The other thing that people talk about is, getting to rub elbows with other athletes and, really kind of experiencing it. So it sounds like it's going to be a much different experience than what you had in Tokyo because you landed, you did your event, and then you had to get out, right?
Right away, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had stories about people who medaled and, basically went back to an empty Olympic Village and, had to call and tell their parents, hey, I won gold. And it sounded so sad. You're going to be able to bring family, friends along?
Yes, yes. My mother, my grandma's coming, my brothers, sisters. I'll have a whole squad.
All right, very good. Mm-hmm. What do you have to do between now and then? We talked a little bit in the elevator on the way up how you're going back to Greece. And is this a matter of continuing your trend, or do you need to ramp up and kind of come down? Like, what do these next few weeks look like for you?
Yep. For me, I believe the next few weeks are going to be very hard and rigorous training. I need to kind of ramp up for about 2 weeks, and then I'll start to taper out for maybe the next week and a half afterwards.
Okay. Lifting, running, like what is it
all
that you need
the
to
above. Lifting, running, and jumping.
And I assume sleep is a big part of this, and probably a big part of what you have to do on a daily basis. What are your kind of sleep patterns?
Mm-hmm. I actually sleep pretty well. I'm usually in bed 11:30, and I wake up around 7:45, and I sleep well.
Good. I'm glad. What about
it's easy for me.
I'm always interested too to find out, is there any kind of specific diet you stick with at all, or do you eat what you want whenever you want?
No, definitely not. First of all, I'm vegetarian, so that already kind of limits what I eat. But during this period, I'm eating less because I'm kind of, I want to be as light as possible. Fat don't fly is what my coach says. So I'm eating like a lot of vegetables all the time. Lettuce, I cut out bread, no pasta. Grains even gets limited like towards the end.
What do you want people to know about triple jump? What at parties do you tell people you do when they're like, oh, triple jump, what's that all about?
The easiest way for me to explain it, I just say it's the one with the sand pit, but you jump three times. Because initially they'll think it's like the long jump.
Yeah.
So I explain it with my fingers, actually. I use my arm as like a runway and my hand is the sandpit, and I pretend like I'm triple jumping down my arm into my hand.
How did you get into it?
A coach just came up to me. I was a freshman in high school and I wanted to pole vault. I had been planning to pole vault for about 2 years before that. And I was holding the pole in my hands. Finally, the coach comes over to me. She's like, no, come over here. I want you to triple jump. I'm like, triple what? Why? No. And I cried.
Fantastic. Well, no, the rest is history. You grew up here. You went to Michigan State and then Olympics. One thing I did want to ask you is, we've got a lot of athletes from a bunch of different sports, obviously. Mm-hmm. And everyone kind of comes in, with a different different source for how they're able to continue their progress, whether it be financially through sponsorships, whether they have a job. How do you do it? I think you're Nike sponsored, right?
Yes, I'm Nike sponsored. I'm also sponsored by a Chicago company, Now Foods.
Okay.
And I have, yeah, those are my two main ones. And I have another partnership with a New York Athletic Club. And that's
so, so that helps support you in obviously places to live and travel. And I'm sure you've got competition expenses, things like that. There's been discussion about more money for athletes. I'm sure you've heard that.
I have heard about it.
I'm sure you're not against it.
I'm not against it, but I have. You're talking about the NIL or?
Well, NIL. And then there was also the discussion about track and field. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. They're doing some track competitions like Al Johnson and Alexis Ohanian with Gabby Thomas are doing a track camp with a lot of good money for track and field, but they don't include the field events, so it's more just for track. Just so I have mixed feelings about that because it's not the full sport.
Feelings about the track and field uniform that we saw unveiled.
Yes. It's not as bad as people think. Okay. It looks like that because there's not a butt filling out the back part where it's going to like curl around. Mm-hmm. So it's not as revealing, you guys. We're fine.
And it's they said that it's supposed to be helpful for the athletes. I don't exactly know how that would be, but
that's
it's something
that... That's what we like to wear. It's most comfortable. It's most freeing. So... We're good. We have a choice.
Okay. Very good. Well, this is very exciting. Where can people follow you on your journey social media wise?
On Instagram, you can follow me at Live Happy, LiveHappii.
And where do they get the book?
The book, You Anthem, can be found on Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Tori. We'll be tracking her throughout the games. And that'll do it for this episode of Quest for Gold. We've got a lot of athletes we've still got to chat with ahead of the Paris Games. Stay tuned. We'll be back next week with another episode. I'm Ryan Burrow. We'll see you then.